Greetings once again to the staff of Nemata. I'm back with another short talk on the Dragonfly Sutra. It's been on my mind a lot lately, you could say. The flutter has been in my mind. And of course, I realize that having introduced it, I have also introduced questions and doubts about what it is and how it works. And that puts you, my friends and allies, in an awkward position. So I'd like to just take a moment to move on, Tathagate, and see if I can clarify the situation that arises with the release of the Dragonfly Sutra. You may hear a little background noise here due to the furnace room being in the next room and some things going on in the household. So bear with me. Today's November 11th, traditionally Armistice Day, celebrating the end of World War I. It's the day when people wear poppies in England, perhaps in other countries too, I don't know. It's also a significant moment for me to present this little attempt at clarification. Coming up on the full moon of Bodhi Ma. So tomorrow, Tuesday the 12th, is the full moon in 20 degrees of Taurus, which places it in the Ram, and places the sun in 20 degrees Scorpio, which is the fulcrum of the scales. So you could say that this sun-moon-earth alignment defines exactly the axis of scales, Ram. And as you know, the Ram is the image of the Bodhisattva, and the Ram is associated with the Maitreya process, as well as with the process of historical avatars, or the phenomenon of historical avatars. So this is a powerful axis. And I'd like to tell you just how powerful it is. And I'd like to describe for you how this axis is part of the overall dynamic of Sophia's dreaming, part of her correction, and thus ought to be known, studied, and put into practice by everyone in Planetary Tantra. I'll begin by addressing the outrageous claim that I make about the Dragonfly Sutra at the very moment of introducing it. You might have noticed that I've spoken in this way before, now and again, frequently actually. I've spoken in this way throughout the GNE. I've spoken in this way, for instance, about the Shakti Cluster app. And it may look odd, and certainly does look odd and dubious to people who are not involved in Planetary Tantra, and maybe as well to some of you. How so? Well, I'm making claims, let's say, regarding the Shakti Cluster. I'm making claims about a device, a tool, an icon, a mandala, an instrument of autogenic magic. Based on what? I'm saying the Shakti Cluster does this, does that. Based on what? It would appear that I have things backward. In the normal course of affairs, it would be a different procedure, wouldn't it? I would, for instance, have devised the Shakti Cluster 10 or 15 years ago, and then I would have introduced it to people, taught it to people, and over a number of years, let's say there were hundreds of instances of using it, some successes and some failures. And on the basis of testing the tool, I could then come forward and make confident statements about how the tool works. But I don't do that, do I? I just come out of the gate saying it does this and it does that. Although there is no body of proof. There's a term in the world of patents, and I think it's called proof of something. I wish I knew exactly what the term is. It's a technical term, and I also believe it's a legal term. So if you apply for a patent for a machine or a device, you have to include in the application the actual empirical proof that it works and how it works. Proof of concept, that's the term. You see, I don't provide proof of concept for the Shakti cluster, nor do I provide proof of concept for the Dragonfly Sutra. Certainly you've noticed that. Certainly you've wondered about that. And the fact that I don't do so would immediately discredit me in the eyes of many tads. And it would immediately put me in the category of a quack and a fraud and someone who is making outrageous claims with no basis. There has been no proof of concept of the Dragonfly Sutra as a device for accruing lucidity. Has there? Nevertheless, I make these claims. So what's going on? Well, it's quite simple, really. In fact, there is an historical precedent, you could say, for my way of proceeding here. The record of history shows that over time, there have been repeatedly members of the human races, both men and women, although primarily men, who have introduced ideas, who have made inventions, who have proposed ideologies and concepts, who have written novels, composed music, and who have not been recognized in the time that they did it. So it's common knowledge that the truth, the veracity, and the application of certain ideas introduced to the world were not realized at the time they were introduced, but later they came to be accepted, evaluated, tested, proven. So the proof came later. But even though the proof came later that a certain idea or invention or great work of art or music was what it was said to be, what it was known to be by the inventor, even though the proof came later, the reality of what it was present from the first moment. So the point I'm making is that with the introduction to the world of any true work of genius, whether it be a practical invention, an ideology, a written or musical creation, concept of social organization and change, whatever it may be, the veracity of such a product of genius is there from the moment that the product is introduced. And only later does it come to be proven over the course of time. Sometimes it takes decades, sometimes it takes a century or two But this is a process that can be recognized in the record of human history and in the what the Romantics called in the trajectory of Faustian striving, the higher striving of the races, is characterized over and over again by the introduction of something that is not recognized at the moment it's introduced, but later comes to be proven. So that phenomenon is exactly what you're seeing here. I don't have proof about what I claim that the Dragonfly Sutra is and what it can do if it is correctly recited and propagated. I don't have any proof of that in the life of any individuals that I know. I haven't tested it. I cannot provide proof of concept. Nevertheless, I have complete confidence that it is exactly what I say it is, and that it will do what I say it will do if it is correctly exercised. So how come I have that? And how come it's important for you to know why I have that? When I talk about works of genius, I want you to comprehend that I'm not necessarily talking about any work of any particular genius, such as the novel The Master and Margarita by Mikhail Bulgakov, or such as Goethe's Theory of Colors or Goethe's Theory of Plant Metamorphosis. You may recognize those achievements as works of individual genius identified with a certain person who lived in a certain time and setting, of course. But I invite you to take a step back and look at those creations generically. They are simply expressions of the genius of the anthropos coming through a particular individual in a particular racial strain. And so behind every genuine act of genius is the generic or innate genius of the anthropos. The narrative tells you that Sophia and Thelete designed the anthropos to operate at a genius level. So you could say, with a funny twist, that when geniuses do appear, they are the norm for the baseline design of the anthropos. They are not the exception, they are the norm. The fact that they only appear scattered in a small selection of any racial population is due to the odds of the game of race, the game of genetic dice. Remember that the game is the dealer. So, as far as race is concerned, race is an event that can be compared to the continual throwing of dice. And due to the low odds of genius appearing, only a small number of geniuses arise in any particular race in any particular epoch. That is not due to the lack of genius in the species. It's simply due to the way that it is distributed through the genetics of the various races. Now, according to the traditional model of Kali Yuga, there were four yugas. Kali Yuga being the last, a time of degeneration and forgetting. However, the model says that at the beginning of the four yugas, the first yuga, during the Satya Yuga, that truth prevailed. Satya means truth in Sanskrit. Sat, Satva, Satya, truth. The legend indicates that there have been times in the development of the various races on the planet when the yield of genius was much higher, when the odds were different. So what happens over time through the course of the kalpa is that the odds diminish and fewer geniuses, fewer and fewer exemplars of truth appear in any particular race and setting. Nevertheless, the same principle applies to the entire kalpa. It is the genius of the anthropos that manifests through any particular individual person who might be regarded as a genius. Now, I'm not particularly interested in the person who is regarded as a genius. What I am interested in, and I bring your attention to this, is the manifestation of that power of genius itself, the innate and generic power of genius transcends any particular person. So you could say that if there is someone who is considered to be a genius, that is so simply due to them holding a share or stake in the generic power of genius that has been endowed in the antipodes. Now, Bodhi Ma is not only the mother of the bodhisattvas, but she is the mother of the Maitreya. And who is the Maitreya? Well, the Maitreya is simply the process of emergence of this genius. Maitreya is the teacher, the one who teaches how the genius emerges in you. And by teaching it, of course, exemplifies it, but it's nothing personal. It's completely transpersonal. I can probably correct what I just said about taking no interest in the person. Of course, I take enormous interest in the individuals who have manifested genius. I love to learn about them. I read their biographies. I love to know as much as I can about the conditions of their life. D.H. Lawrence, for instance. I've read many biographies. Part of the art of celestics is dedicated to the study of the exemplars. So, yes, of course, on a human-to-human level, the recognition of the personality and living conditions of a genius is something of high interest. That's in the foreground of the consideration I'm setting out for you here. But what I'm asking you to do is lift your eyes a little bit and look beyond that into the distant background. Where do these geniuses come from? They all come from the same source. And that source can be identified graphically and mythopoetically in the axis of the ram and the scales along the lines of 20 degrees Taurus Scorpio. Remember, 20 Scorpio is the fulcrum of the scales. We could say that Bodhi Ma is that frequency or modality of the love and intelligence of the aeons of Faya that oversees and nurtures the innate genius. And what you need to know about Bodhi Ma is that the closer you are to that frequency, the more receptive you are to that frequency, the more you have, the more you enjoy an innate realization that the true proof of genius can only come from yourself. Now, there are certain geniuses in the past, let's say, for instance, William Blake, the British poet William Blake, was a poetic genius. And during the time that Blake lived, he wrote poetry, he wrote diatribes and tirades and long narrative poems, and he painted. And the works of Blake were not recognized for their greatness during the time that he lived. And so it came to pass, and there's a whole story about this, you can go read who discovered Blake and when, and it was considerably more than a century after he lived, I believe. There comes a time when someone else who is not William Blake comes along, discovers this genius, and brings the works of genius to the light of day. And so there is an advocacy of a second party. The second party stands before the world and advocates for the lost or forgotten or overlooked genius. And so the world relies on the testimony of the second party to know about the veracity of the work of William Blake, such as it is. In that case, and that is generally the norm of what happens, in that case, the proof of the genius of the original creator comes from a second party. But when you approach Bodhi Ma, when you enter into that particular frequency, which in a way is the highest frequency of the Shakti cluster. I want to find the right word. It is a distinct frequency standing apart from all others. It's the highest harmonic of frequency of the harmonics in the Shakti cluster. When you stand in the focus, in the fulcrum and center of that frequency, you realize that the proof of genius cannot really ever come from a second party, but it can only come from yourself. So the reason why I do not introduce the Dragonfly Sutra with a proof of concept is, first of all, because I don't have proof of concept. And second of all, because I have not done the experimentation with groups of people reciting the Dragonfly Sutra and then observing what happens to their minds, observing how they handle the sutra, observing the way it affects them. I haven't done any of that. I haven't conducted that experiment. But what I'm trying to tell you is that experiment is unnecessary on the standard of Bodhi Ma, who oversees and nurtures the innate genius in you, which is not yours. It's not yours alone. It's yours to enjoy, but it's not yours alone. It's a transpersonal genius. And ultimately, the only proof of its veracity is the proof that you demonstrate of it. So even if I were to present a body of research going back 10 years, recording the use of the Dragonfly Sutra, recording many personal testimonies, the actual recordings of sessions of reciting it, and then discussions of how it works, even if I were to present you that proof, that to Bodhi Ma is not the proof. The proof is how you show it to be true. You are the proof. In this enlightenment, the realization to be one can only be one when you know that you are the sole and exclusive proof of it. It's as if you are the sole and exclusive proof of it. And then when Susan or David or Margaret does the same, they also are the sole and exclusive proof of it. That is how Bodhi Ma proves. That is her way of proving that the anthropic genius does exist existentially and can be manifested. So right now, as it stands, it appears you have an enormous and unique situation. Every work of genius, every stroke of genius, and stroke is a word in the Dragonfly Sutra, has to appear through some individual, man or woman, of some race in some time and setting. And when it appears, the one who originates it at that moment is identical with the proof. So the one who originates it, namely myself, is the sole and exclusive proof of it. But the proof is transferable. The Tao can be transmitted, but it cannot be received. That's Chuang Tzu, a Chinese mystic. The Tao can be transmitted, but it cannot be received. So, the status of being the sole and exclusive proof of some great act of genius can be transmitted and shared. And that is the way that Bodhi Ma nurtures the genius. So even though there would be, let me repeat this, because I think I'm saying it correctly, even though there would be, even though there could be, a massive body of proof of 10 years' work with the Dragonfly Sutra, 10 years down the road from now, moving on, Tathagata, it would not prove its veracity for Bodhi Ma, the mother of the Bodhisattvas. There are certain things that you can only know to be true when you yourself are the source of that truth. And that is the highest platinum standard for truth that the human races can achieve. The Dragonfly Sutra comes to you on that platinum standard of truth. Now, it is a fact, and I'll just maybe at the risk of overworking my point here, it is a fact, or I ask you to contemplate this, not a fact, but a scenario. Suppose that someone walking down the street in Novato, California, saw an envelope on the ground, and they picked up the envelope and they opened it up. It unfolded into one sheet of typing size paper, and it printed on that paper was the title, the Dragonfly Sutra, the 11 lines, the two envois, and beneath it was a short paragraph saying, "This is a Dragonfly Sutra. It is the ultimate and only sutra for the end of Kali Yuga. It is adequate to liberate the human mind to its highest genius potential." And, you know, a paragraph, a summary paragraph, making the claims that I am making about the Dragonfly Sutra. And there it is, all printed on a piece of paper that someone found in the street. Were that to have been the case, it wouldn't make any difference whatsoever who was the author of the Dragonfly Sutra. Do you see that? So the fact that I am the author, in a sense, doesn't really play into the ultimate recognition of what it is. So it doesn't matter who originated it. What matters is what it actually is. Now, having said all that, I'm just going to conclude quickly now by briefing you on, you know, the difficulties I face in getting this out. I've spoken about this already. I'm not going to repeat what I said. I'm just going to talk to you intimately. As friends and allies, I realize that the way that I have introduced it without actually reciting it or providing it for you to read in its entirety can be confusing and possibly even off-putting. I mean, why am I doing it in this way? I can easily imagine that you would have the impression that I'm perpetrating some kind of mindfuck, that I'm teasing you in some perverse way, that I'm promising things that I can't deliver. Honestly, I don't know how I'm going to deliver the Dragonfly Sutra. I honestly don't. I'm concentrating on it every day, along with other matters that occupy my time and attention. So I know I don't have to ask you to bear with me. I'm telling you this to confirm what you already suspect. I am in a really tricky situation with the transmission of the Dragonfly Sutra. There was some discussion, a little bit, a few back and forth entries on a thread in the members' forum. And of course, the participants in that thread had no idea what they were talking about. Well, it's not their fault. I suspect that if I am able to record and repeat 10 times with sufficient clarity and simplicity what the Dragonfly Sutra is, and introduce the working of it, if I am able to do that, after 10 times, you'll begin to get what it is. So at the beginning, it's natural that you would feel baffled and exasperated and that you would speculate. It's natural that the very introduction of it would prompt questions in your mind. Questions and issues would come up, and they have absolutely nothing to do with what it actually is. So I'm on the same page with you. I am able to put myself in your position. Believe me, I am. I know how perplexing it may be for you at this moment. But all I can say is, Tathagata, what moves on and what causes to move on. That's the zero setting. The attention that you give to me about the Dragonfly Sutra is already taking you to its innate veracity, even before you know it is. So I ask you to consider that and try to relax and be comfortable and don't speculate and don't go off on tangents and questions until you have more to go on. Agreed? Tathagate.